Of the Hornets, go.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the same place they play so far.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let the Vegas play against. And Vegas has to win. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, this game was, a little closer than expected in even, you know, the stat lines, but never really felt in jeopardy, did it?
It did not feel in jeopardy, but you could sense that, you know, these are two programs that are far closer together just due to the talent that these programs have typically. You know, this was the first opponent that Alabama has faced this year that I think was able to really physically match up to them.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we kind of knew that going in. And, you know, I think back to the, you know, Florida State, I think we said, well, that's the toughest defense we'll face until, you know, LSU. And you know, kind of here we are. And funny how predictions like that or our thoughts like that, you know, kind of, you know, bear themselves out. A couple of takeaways that I had on offense, I'm just going to jump right in. Is that on one hand, we did what we do. It was a balanced approach. We distributed the ball, you know, seven receivers, one tight end, and, you know, for a touchdown and one running back. On the other hand, let me finish that thought. It was distributed much like we have kind of been doing, but it was dialed down, like the volume was turned down. And I attribute that to the strength of the LSU defense. But on the other hand, it felt like we played with a tighter bench, a shorter bench. We saw a lot more, and this is a point you made, you know, recently about the three freshman receivers versus, you know, some of the vets. We played a lot more Calvin Ridley, Sims, and Robert Foster. He even had two catches. And then we really limited the bench on the running back. I think Josh Jacobs had one run, and I didn't see Najee at all. And then Robinson played only on the kneel down at the end of the game. And so it seemed like we tried to do the same kind of stuff, but with a smaller profile of people. I thought that was a weird sort of juxtaposition.
Well, that just speaks to it's a bigger game on the line, right? And just, you know, you're gonna start with your more experienced guys. And I think if the game had if we had built a bigger lead, I think you would have seen some of these other guys that we've been accustomed to seeing for the past few weeks. But just because this was, you know, a two touchdown game throughout, I think that limited, you know, that limited guys like Tua and Najee, you know, see in the field.
Tua, I hear what you're saying on Tua. Najee's the one that's interesting to me. And I'll throw this at you this way and tell me what you think. We seemed, and I'll say so, Saban, right? I think Saban sometimes has a fetish for the big running backs. And it seemed that he was trying to force Bo on, you know, onto LSU. It's almost like he had visions of, and he probably has, he probably, you know, some kids have, you know, visions of sugar plums dancing in their heads. I think Coach Saban has visions of, you know, Derrick Henry, you know, dancing in his head and carrying the ball, you know, 40 times against LSU a few years ago. And so I think he just had visions of not 40 carries. That's ridiculous. But giving it to the big back and letting the big back just wear down the opposing defense. And Bo, and we've talked about Bo, he's not always as physical as you maybe think he would be or should be. And so that just leads me to believe, why would you not go with Najee? Because he has been running very angry and very physically, and he's a big guy too. It just seemed like if this big back's not going to do it, then this other big back will. That's kind of where my head is on, especially on Najee.
You know, I can see your take on Najee just because of the, you know, the physical presence that he brings running the ball. You know, I'm going to surprise you a little bit when I say that Saban should have gone with his sugar plums dancing in his head a little more. I think this game could have been very different early to Alabama's favor if we would have gone to the run more. And, right. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you look at this drive sheet, you know, Damian Harris, first play of the game, gets 5 yards. Well, if it wasn't for a blown assignment on the 2nd and 5, you know, for Jalen to get sacked, yep. You know, it now sets up a 3rd and 15, right? Well, Robert Foster doesn't run his route past the first down line, which he should have done. It would have been a first down.
Yep.
The very next drive, David, Bo Scarborough on his 3 carries, he lost yards on the first carry, but then he ran for 4 yards on the next play. And then 2 plays later, he ran for 4 yards. And then the next run, he runs for 10 yards for, you know, a first down. And so, quite frankly, of the 4 first carries of the night, 3 from Bo and 1 from Damian, we were averaging 4+ yards on 3 of those 4 carries. And I don't think that's very bad stats.
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, I think we wanted to pass the ball more. I think we knew that LSU was going to kind of stack up, and they did, and we wanted to pass the ball more. I think we wanted to, you know, get half of it on first down, pass on second down, and then be able to run on third down. That's what I think that's sort of the formula, and that's probably too formulaic, but I think that's really kind of what we were going after, is we wanted to try to beat some of their man-to-man, and we had, you know, decent success with it. But they did load up, and they came after Jalen, and I think and a little bit of this is development, you know, he wanted to stay in the pocket. And, you know, a couple times – and it's all just, you know, sort of growing pains. But, you know, a couple times he could have thrown it away. A couple of times he should have bailed on the play and ran. And a couple times he took big sacks. I don't know. But I agree with you. I think if – there's a little bit to having a plan and sticking with it. And there's a little bit to, hey, we're averaging 5 yards a carry on first down. Maybe let's take a series or two and maybe experiment with that a little bit more.
I just wish we would have explored more with the running game, because on the 3rd drive, 1st and 10 from the 9, Damian gets 8 yards on 1st down. 2nd down, he runs for 3, so he gets a 1st down on 2 carries.
Yep.
And then the next thing you know, we drop back to pass 3 times in a row on the, you know, after we've gotten a 1st and 10. So when you look back at the stat sheet, okay, you see Jalen Hurts ran 14 times. You see Bo carried it 11 and Damian carried it 9.
Yep.
And so I would say that for Bo and Damian to combine for 20 carries and Jalen had 14, those numbers just don't work for me.
Yeah, I just would have liked to see. That gets into the Tommy danger zone, right?
Well, what I mean by that is in this game, because of the success that a Derrick Henry had, I think that if the final stat sheet showed Bo Scarborough with 20 carries – Bo and Damian combined 30 carries in this football game, I think this game would have been a wider margin of victory. I think this would have been a 38-10 type of ball game.
Yeah, I think if we had done that, we certainly, you know, they had the time of possession differential on us. We sort of leveled it out in the second half, but going into half, you know, they almost had 2-1 on us. And I liked the fact that we had points, but I was a little bit, you know, are we going to wear down, especially we'll talk about defense, some of the attrition that we're experiencing. And I thought, man, I don't see them, because we had 14 at half. And I was like, I don't see them scoring 14 points on us. At the same time, I can, and I don't see us not scoring, but at the same time, I can connect some dots here where I, you know, they could battle back. And like I said, I liked our lead, but I could paint a picture where I, you know, you could play from their hand too, right?
Sure. But you know, Saban said afterwards, talked about how much they played 8 guys in the box and how they were forcing, you know, Jalen to throw the ball and beat the man-to-man coverage. But, you know, I guess I'm saying I think we had a pretty decent amount of success when they had 8 guys in the box, which I see it as more of a positive than a – I guess what I'm saying is I think the running game was going better than they thought it was, and I think they abandoned it too early. I'll say it that way.
Yeah, I agree. I think what's interesting, and you know, and it's going to be a function of the opponents we have coming up, right? But we might see teams try to stack the box against us, and they may not be as athletic as you know, as LSU is. And so maybe that's something Mississippi State, you know, and we'll talk about them in a little bit too, but, you know, maybe that's something, you know, they'll do. Now, you know, Auburn, I think, has a stout front, and Georgia, you know, they're going to be another animal too. And so some of these teams may try to do this tactic, and they may have the horses to, you know, let's say pull it off, but not everyone will. And Mississippi State, and, you know, depending upon how some of the other matchups go, we may face teams that don't have the horses to pull it off, but they may try. And, you know, that'll be dispiriting for someone if we can maintain success running against an 8-man front. And boy, does that do for play action pass. So I don't know. We may see some of that this coming weekend, I would imagine.
No, absolutely. Well, I am gonna surprise you with this comment. I think in his continued development, okay, and he still has room to improve. I think this was Jalen's best game as an Alabama quarterback for Jalen. His stat sheet does not show it. And you look at the stat sheet, you look at the quarterback rating and all that, blah, blah, blah. But he is making improvements of trying to go through his progressions. He's trying to sit there. I mean, like when I saw the stat sheet afterwards that he had 14 carries, it surprised me because there were several times that, you know, early in the game that play to Robert Foster, you know, that should have been a first down. That was a 3rd and 15. The very next drive, he completed a big 3rd and 11. Those are in the first half. Those aren't counting, you know, the big play he made in the second half. His ability to extend the play and sit back in the pocket, we talked about this last week. He is making either he's being coached up or he's doing it, or it's a combination of the two, which, you know, is possible. You can see that he is sitting in that pocket for a longer period of time, and I'm okay with that because that's what's going to help him get – that's what's going to help him get better as a quarterback.
I think Tua is – you can color this however you want to. I think Tua is helping him get better.
Well, that's true too. But I definitely think that I see a conscious effort on his part of trying to be more of a pocket passer.
Yes. No, I agree, and I agree, and I like the fact that he still has, you know, the escapability and the athleticism to make a play with his legs, and he did that, you know, a couple of times on Saturday. You know, the touchdown that he ran, and he had a couple other runs that were called runs, and you think about he's had a pattern the last, you know, call it several weeks of fewer and fewer called runs, and so I like the fact, and we've kind of talked about this too, that he may sort of unleash his athleticism, you know, sort of here and there, and still be as proficient as ever at it. And so it was fun to get to see some of that. I like that he ran for first downs a couple of times. And the 14, was it 14 or 16 carries, the number of carries, that's going to include the times that he was sacked. And so that is a little bit of a misnomer, you know, because those were not like call them pure runs. Those were him truly staying in the pocket and, you know, getting sacked. But
No, that's true. And, you know, going back to Bo and Damian real quick, I just want to say that I don't think they had enough carries to get lathered up to really get into the flow of the game. And I think our offensive line, I think their strength is the running game. And I think you just didn't give the – I don't think you gave our horses on the offensive line enough – opportunities to make plays, and they had to instead you know, because they didn't have the ball a lot, right? And so because of all the three and outs, they ended up having to spend a lot of time pass blocking, and that's just not their strength. And the LSU defensive front gave more athleticism than they've been playing against probably since Florida State. And so I just don't think that made it a good matchup for us, you know, from that standpoint. I'm not saying they did bad. I guess I'm saying I think the offensive line did better than I'm hearing some people felt like they did, just due to the circumstances.
No, I think you're right. I think that I think that is the strength of the line. And I think if we had run the ball, if we had run the ball more, then I think that would have helped the line establish themselves. And I think that would have helped the time of possession, which is going to help the defense over the course of the game. And there's a point at which, because you have to think that that we're monitoring this, right? What, you know, almost on a minute by minute, you know, what's the time of possession metric? What's our run pass sort of distribution? Balancing that against the game plan, balancing that against what do we see working and not working, all of sort of this calculus that you would think that would go into play calling. And I think that I would think, I mean, I was sitting in the stands doing this. I don't know what they're doing in, you know, on the sidelines necessarily, but at some point I started thinking we need to run the ball here for the sake of running the ball. We need to run the ball here and maybe let the clock go, you know, sort of wind down. And even if we have a three and out, this have a long three and out, right? Where we take the play clock down, you know, inside of 5 seconds every time. And we're doing that as much to establish the run as we are to keep the defense off the field. I think I would have intentionally said, we're going to run the ball three times here and we're going to get the ball and we're going to snap the ball inside of 5 seconds. I don't care if we get a first down or not. I think, right, I would have taken a possession and said, look, here's what we're doing.
Well, you know, even only having the ball for under 26 minutes, I mean, you and I 10 years ago would have gladly taken an Alabama LSU game that if we had the ball 26 minutes, we still scored 24 points, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is a lot of points for only having the ball for 26 minutes.
Oh, it really, really is.
Yeah. Against a team like this.
Yeah.
So
we're spoiled rotten talking about it like this, aren't we?
I mean, no, I'm just saying that to your point, had they gotten a little more time of possession and gotten it more like 34 minutes for them and 26 minutes for LSU, this would have had the score that we expected the final score to be.
Right.
It just didn't work out that way for that reason. Hey, I want to, because of the time of possession didn't go the way we expected it to go. You know, I want to quickly just point out a couple things. I want to point out just the intentional design of the scheme under this offensive coordinator to get the tight end involved.
Yes.
And when Herb Smith caught his touchdown, I said, oh, my gosh, if this guy would have been here when O.J. Howard was here, O.J. Howard would have, like, won the Heisman. Of course, he wouldn't have won the Heisman. I'm being sarcastic.
I'm with you.
But look what O.J. Howard could have been.
Yeah.
With a coach like this who comes from the Patriots system where they utilize a two tight end set. I just really wish this guy could have coached O.J. Howard.
Yeah, I hear you. I think the same thing.
I mean, look what Irv Smith is doing, right? And he's not O.J. Howard. And look what he's getting to do. I mean, he got a touchdown in this game. Mm-hmm. O.J. Howard only got touchdowns when we played in national championship games. It's like, what the hell? Are you kidding me?
No, that's absolutely true. I think that, you know, and Irv didn't get into the action until, you know, maybe midseason, and has really, you know, made some strides in the last few weeks with his play and catching the ball. Got him a couple of touchdowns now. I expect that we're going to see his role continue to emerge. And yeah, I think that I think he's going to walk out of here with some pretty impressive numbers when his career is over.
No, this is true. A couple more things I want to mention. I would have liked to have seen Josh Jacobs
incorporated
into the passing game a little bit.
Yes.
I think we missed there by not doing that. I would have liked to have seen us call some more screens in this game.
Yep.
Okay. If we're going to pass the ball more, and they're going to pin their ears back and they're going to, you know, have the kind of pressure that they do from the Arden Keys of the world, then I would have liked to have seen some screens called. I know we tried to do a couple, but I would have maybe done some misdirection and would have done some screens. I want to talk about just Ruggs's catch. You know, it was just funny that, you know, all this talk has been you've had 5 catches and 5 touchdowns, and it was kind of funny the poor guy has to, you know, come back to earth and realize that you can catch a ball and not score a touchdown.
Yep.
Even though I think had Jalen kind of put the ball out there a little bit, I think he probably would have scored on that catch. But
probably would have, right? It's hard for him to be mad at a 40-plus yard pass, though, right?
No. But he, to his credit, for a freshman, showed a lot of presence in the way he came down with the ball.
Yes.
So that he wouldn't drop the ball. lot of players would have, you know, the ground would have caused that ball to jar out.
Yeah, he's got a lot of sort of innate ability, doesn't he? I think he's going to be a fun one to see develop.
He has a lot of football IQ, it appears. What else jumped out at you on the offensive side of the ball?
You know, you mentioned Josh Jacobs. I would have liked to have seen him, like you said, incorporated in the passing game. We've seen some unique wrinkles with him. You know, he had one carry and ran up the middle. I didn't like that. You know, let's toss sweep him outside. You know, do something to try to put him in space because that's where his magic happens. And I know that's what you're thinking in, you know, in the passing game. You know, I thought Cam Sims had a really nice catch. I thought it was going to be intercepted. And even looking back, you know, they showed the replay on the Jumbotron. Even looking back at the replay, I was like, I'm not sure how that was not intercepted. Because that safety was just streaking across. And it was a small window anyways. And the window, like, literally was closing with that safety coming through. I thought that was a nice pitch and catch. And sometimes, even if you throw it in there, that can be distracting to the receiver. Because they may be expecting it to not get there. So I thought that was a nice play on both sides. You know, that was fun to see. And I'm just going to double down. I wish we would have seen some. I agree. We should have seen more carries for, you know, for Bo and Damian. I would have liked to have seen us try to work a possession with Najee in there. I think that I don't like, and we see Saban do this, and we understand why he does it. But I don't always like the way that he shrinks the bench, because there are some guys you shrink the bench to ensure they don't have an opportunity, because you know you don't want them in those pressure situations. I don't think Najee's that guy. I think you put him out there, and you let him sort of demonstrate what he can do. I mean, T.J. Yeldon as a true freshman, you know, won the game, right? And so he's not afraid to play freshman in those games. We had three freshman receivers. You know, two of them had big catches. I just kind of doubled down. I would have liked to have seen him in there because I think he runs – he's not as big as Bo, but he is a big back, and he runs – I think he runs sort of more belligerent and more physical than what you typically see out of Bo.
No, I'll give you that. I want to go back to that third down play on the catch by Cam Sims.
Yeah.
And I just want to mention that, you know, as you watch the replay, and I went back and, you know, reran that play several times, there was three or four – I think there was four guys total near the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say, like – I don't want to say he threaded a needle. It's not that type of description. It is not the right type of description. But, you know, he did put that in a small window.
Yes.
And that was a quarterback play. You know what I'm saying? Like that wasn't a running quarterback throw. That was a passing quarterback throw to make that throw.
Yes.
Is the best way I want to say that.
No, I like that.
That was big for his confidence, I think.
Yep.
And that was big for the coaches to give him the opportunity to try to, you know, maybe sometimes they don't allow him, right, to throw into certain coverages. And I'm not saying I want him to say, hey, I'm by Brett Favre and I can put it here and there and there. But, you know, maybe he will get the opportunity to do some of that more, because that was a big third down play, you know, that put him at the 25-yard line that led to a big touchdown that at the time we scored that touchdown and made it 21 points, I expected us to score a lot more. You know what I'm saying? I didn't think we were only going to score three more points the rest of the game.
So, no, I am with you. That was a quarterback's throw. I think that's the right way to say it. And, you know, not just to repeat everything you said, I don't want him to go out and, you know, become a Brett Favre-type gunslinger either. However, I like the fact that that gives him more confidence and that he may challenge himself in ways that he has not – historically challenged himself. And not all of that is to say go out there and take big risks. Sometimes it's just throw to the open guy that you're not looking at. You know, feel the confidence to stand in the pocket that one more heartbeat and look to that third receiver and then let her rip. Because we don't always see that. And if he'll do that And it sounds easy, right? But if, but, and it's not, but if he'll do that, I think his game can really just, can really sort of bump to another level, because there are a number of times when that second guy's open, that third guy's open. And if that, and if these types of plays give him the confidence to do that, then that'll be fun to watch him, you know, take that next step.
No, absolutely, man. Well, give me your mini game ball. Who are you going to give it to me on offense?
Man, I had a moment during the game. I had a number of these last year, and we would even in the stands talk about it. Like, that's my mini game ball. I haven't had that in a while, and it happened on Saturday. And so I just got really excited because I've had my mini game ball guy, you know, identified, you know, since the play happened. And so I'm going Jerry Jeudy. And as soon as you hear the name, you know where I'm going. But he dropped a on second down. He dropped a pass that would have gone for a first down. Hit him on the hands. It was as good as you can get, right? You can probably, you know, every pass can be a little bit better, but come on, you got to catch him. And so that's one that he absolutely should have caught, and he didn't. And we've talked about him being a guy that we think's emerging, had some leadership qualities that, you know, that we see from the stands, right? And so on the next play, he, you know, Jalen was going to pass. You know, there's pretty good coverage, and so he was forced to run and did not look like he was going to make it. But one of the blocks that sprung him at the very end of the run was none other than Jerry Jeudy coming back and laying someone out to help Jalen get the first down. And so I like the fact that he acquitted himself on the drop on the very next play. Didn't take him a series. It didn't get in his head. He didn't, you know, some of the things that we've talked about other guys doing. Next play, he lined up, forgot it, and made a big play to help us get the first down. And, oh, coincidentally, that was a scoring drive. It was the field goal, and I know we like touchdowns, but that was a field goal that, you know, extended the game, extended, you know, the score. And, you know, I thought at that point was – and the game I thought was already out of reach. They weren't going to score that many points. But you get that another, you get that other score up there. You make it, you know, another possession, you know, type game. I think that was sort of what the doctor ordered. And I think Jerry Jeudy, I give him a lot of credit for his role in that.
Well, on that play, he did a good job of actually turning his body to the side. And so, you know, there was no chance he was going to get called for targeting.
Right.
The way he performed that crackback block. It was still very effective, but there was no way it was going to be reviewed.
Right. So and there's your football IQ there too, right?
Yeah, that showed a little bit about, you know, the presence of mind of how he did that.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to give it to Ruggs. I wanted to give it to – I could have done Irv Smith as well for the reasons we've mentioned. I'm just mentioning Ruggs for the same reasons we've already mentioned. Two young players – new to this offense, you know, Ruggs obviously, you know, for different reasons because he's a true freshman. But both of these guys are getting chances to make plays in offenses that you would have expected with all the names coming back. You wouldn't have heard an Irv Smith Jr. with two touchdowns or Ruggs with five touchdowns. Are you kidding me? And so both of them made big plays in this game. I mean, they accounted for 30% of the yards in this game. I mean, you look back at this, these two guys accounted for 85 yards of the 183 yards total. So just both of those guys, you know, just want to kind of give a shout out to for the reasons we've mentioned.
No, that's awesome. Well, switch the field on us and talk to us about defense.
You know, I was surprised when I was, you talk about the shortening of the bench. And how he did that, but I am surprised at what players did get a lot of playing time. And I know
I was gonna say, as soon as you said shortening the bench, I was gonna that theory doesn't hold up on defense, does it?
No, it doesn't. And we should talk about the injuries, and we absolutely will here in just a second. But you know, just to finish that thought, you know, you look at the stat sheet and you look at a name like Kenan Williams, And you looked at the fact that he finished with, you know, 8 tackles on the game, with a sack and 2 tackles for a loss. He got a lot of good minutes in this game. I was surprised at how much he played.
He got some of them early. I was surprised at how early he was in there. I was like, oh, 92's in already. Very early in the game he was in.
And even with Hand back, are you surprised? I mean, why do you think he was in so early?
Well, I don't know. I think that we knew that it was going to be a hard physical game. I think that we knew that we were going to rotate our folks. I think that we wanted to play Hand, but I think we wanted to have him on something of a pitch count. And I think Quinnen has come on. We've seen, you know, this is not the first show we've mentioned him, right? We have been mentioning him, and I think he continues to get better and better. And he, you know, they had a bye, and I bet you he put in 2 really good weeks of work and earned himself an elevated place in the rotation, and he took advantage of it on Saturday.
Well, see, that's why I wanted to mention it, because you always talk about winning the bye week. He must have got the mini game ball for the bye week.
There you go, right?
Right? I mean, he must have won the bye week.
I like that.
Because he just came out so early. I was shocked. I like had to do a double take and make sure that was the number I saw.
Yep.
So that surprised me. Well, you know, obviously it was not good. Some of the injuries that happened very quickly in a short period of time in the ball game. Let's talk about Sean Dion Hamilton first. Yep. Obviously the biggest blow to this defense. You know, we've talked about how we were surprised how he's been able to come back as soon as he has and being as effective as he has. And, you know, this guy was a semifinalist for the Butkus Award.
Yep.
And so obviously was putting together a really good season. And I think we're really going to miss his presence on the inside.
We're going to miss him. There's no doubt about it. And we're going to miss him in ways that
most people will not even think about.
Yes. Yes. I was going to say your average fan wouldn't think about, because, you know, because he does a couple of things, right? He is a quality player. Let's start with that. He absolutely is a quality player. And so, you know, on a lot of regards, it sort of starts and stops there. But with Sean Dion Hamilton, there's a lot more to it. You know, he's a very heady player. I think that he helps the other players in the defensive huddle. I think he helps, you know, with the alignments. I think he adds, you know, organization and structure to the defense. And so he helps in intangible ways like that. And then there's just a reality of he is soaking up snaps. And so in addition to just the quality he brings to his snaps, and he plays a lot of snaps, now someone else or multiple somebody else's have to soak those up. And it just, to me, and it all kind of singles around the same thing, this guy's not going to play. But there's, to me, there's sort of 3 nuances of him not playing that make him especially tough to replace. And by no stretch is he our most talented linebacker. But I think that he brings more to the table in the way of intangibles than some of our other linebackers.
Well, I think because of, you know, the best way I can refer to Sean Dion Hamilton is him being a gym rat. And yeah. And him understanding through film study, diagnosing the play at, you know, pre-snap and where the ball's going. And so there are times this season on the goal line where he has gone in the backfield and met the running back and tackled him for a loss, you know, on a big goal line stand when the other linebackers were still sitting there in their position.
Yep.
He had already diagnosed the play, shot in between a guard and and the center, and made a play in the backfield.
Yeah, and you know, and I remember as a freshman, he saw the field some as a freshman, and that was one of the things Saban, you know, used to say about him, that he was a real heady player, that he knew the playbook and had, you know, sort of good football eye, and, you know, I guess the word of the day is football IQ, right? He beats you with his football IQ as much or maybe more than he does with his athleticism.
And I will tell you, this is nothing against the other players, but it's kind of like you were talking about these other linebackers. You know, this is the theme of this season, right? All the linebackers that have gone down.
Yes.
Well, no offense to the other guys who have to step up now, but his loss was not more glaring than on the big run that set up their one touchdown. Because had he been in there, I don't think half the defense would have been on one, thinking it's one call, and the other half thinking it's another call, and the two inside linebackers were out of place. And I think he would have been where he was supposed to be, and it might have been a 6-yard carry, but it wouldn't have been a 54-yard carry.
I think that's spot on, and I like the, even the way that Saban talked about it, and I've heard Mark Schlereth, you know, former Bronco and Redskin, talk about this, you know, from offensive line play, that if everyone plays it the right way, then you can get a good result. If everyone plays it the wrong way, but they play it the same wrong way, you probably can get a good result there, because at least you know everything's covered. But when half do one thing and half get another, that's where you have, you know, an opportunity, for a big miss and a big, you know, breakdown. And that's exactly what happened on that play. And I think you're exactly on. Isn't that the exact personification of not having, you know, your heady football IQ middle linebacker in there?
Yes, yes. And so I think that play was a glaring example of what they're going to miss by him not being there.
Yes.
And so guys are, you know, Saban didn't like in his press conference being asked about next man to stand up, because he was – or next man up, because he was like, everybody should be ready to play. He didn't like the analogy of, you know, it's the next guy, next man up. He's thinking everybody should be, you know, trying to improve their game on a constant basis, which I thought was interesting.
Yep.
But right now, I don't know that we – it's going to put more on Rashawn Evans, who obviously got banged up in the game as well. He even got taped up on the field.
Yep.
Thank goodness Rashawn Evans is there right now, because I'm concerned – that unlike outside linebacker, where we had other edge guys who could do that rabbit rushing role, this is a big loss for them. This is not quite Eddie Jackson, but it's close.
It is close, and there is a ripple effect, right? Because and I like Rashawn Johnson, you know, I like, you know, Rashawn Evans as much as anybody. But we will send him on a lot of blitzes, and we can do that because we've got, you know,
Sean Deion Hamilton there.
You know, SDH sort of staying home, right? And so if he has to stay home in the middle, then we're not getting sort of that the potential for the pressures and explosive plays that we're getting from Evans. And
which is what Evans brought to this team last year before he had to step in for Sean Deion Hamilton when he got hurt.
Right. That's exactly right. And so we're going to need to – and it's a good thing we're getting pressure from the D front, right? Because it used to be everything had to be manufactured, where at least the, you know, the defensive front is getting some pressure and some sacks. And not like last year, but more than they were at the beginning of the year. But it's almost back to we're going to have to manufacture. If we're not going to be able to use Evans kind of like we've been using him, then – we're going to have to manufacture some pressure. You know, Anthony Jennings is going to have to get on his horse. You know, Terrell Lewis, I mean, is he going to be able to come back? There were some reports that those guys may come back. And, you know, that becomes a decision of do I medical redshirt or do I come back? And, you know, the competitor in them is going to want to come back. And I understand that too. But gosh, we may need them in a way that a week ago I was not expecting we would.
Well, you also have you
really need to. I mean, he's an athletic player, and we lost Mac Wilson too. And Mac sort of been evolving into a more and more consistent player. And he was doing that sort of ahead of, and you know, of course, he was on the team last year, so he's ahead of the curve. But you know, Dylan Moses, who's maybe a little more raw version of a Mac, he's gonna have to grow up and mature. And you know, and he has a capability and all of that stuff. But we're going to need to see these guys step up in a way that you know, they necessarily haven't had to.
No, they haven't. And what's I think Mac Wilson is a big loss, because obviously he had surgery yesterday. You know, he had surgery yesterday on his foot, And they're saying 4 to 6 weeks, but that could be generous.
Yep.
You know, that could, you know, it could definitely take longer than that to, you know, from his surgery that he had. And so, you know, it puts a lot on Keith Holcomb, you know, to just transition to Keith for a second.
Yep.
I think Keith had found a comfort level as to finding a starting role on the defense in the nickel third and long situation. Well, I'm just going to tell you, when he came in and he was in on that wildcat play where they had the big run, that was not third and 10. Keith Holcomb was having success coming in with his football IQ to be able to cover the middle of the field between the hashes on third and 10. It wasn't quite the same to be in on all three downs.
Right.
And so I think it's going to put more pressure on his game. I think his game was being allowed to slowly develop as a linebacker, and I think he was finding a role on this team in nickel formation. Nothing wrong with that. But first and second down, he wasn't getting quite as many snaps. Right when Sean and Rashawn came back, he was more of a third and long kind of guy. Well, now you're going to have to ask him to play first and second down. And you're going to have to ask a Dylan Moses to step in. You know, also in practice today, you know, in the brief media period, they mentioned Ben Davis.
Yep.
And they mentioned that Ben Davis was no longer wearing a scout jersey and that he was running with the outside linebackers. Well, maybe Ben's a guy that gets brought back inside, you know, because that's where he played. So yeah. It'll be interesting to see how they do this, because I think that for both Rashawn Evans and Keith Holcomb, you know, let's be fair to Rashawn. Rashawn was not a starting middle linebacker last year. He was a situational guy who was very successful, who got thrust into the starting role when Sean Deon Hamilton got hurt. And, oh, by the way, it's the semifinal game of the college football championship, right? So it's not like Rashawn's had a lot of starts inside linebacker under his belt. He's a really good player. But he hasn't, you know, started in there for 3 years like Sean Deon Hamilton has. So,
yeah, I completely agree. I think one of the things that
that's no knock on him, by the way. I'm just saying it's apples and oranges kind of deal.
No, it is. And you know, one thing that you know, then, and maybe this pays some dividends for us a lot earlier than we were expecting. But you know, early in the season, and you know, granted, after Florida State, we played, you know, Fresno and Colorado State. And so, you know, take that, you know, for what it's worth as well. But you know, Keith had a couple of pretty good games in those time frames. And so it's not altogether, you know, and he was sort of thrust into a larger role, but, you know, it was a lesser opponent. And so hopefully it's not that much of a stretch for him to get thrust back into a larger role. Just it'll be a higher level of opponent.
No, absolutely. But if you look at the depth chart, you know, two of the four inside guys had surgery yesterday.
Yeah.
So that only leaves two, right? And then if you have a true freshman and Dylan Moses as their backup, right, then the fun question is who's the other guy? Who else? I mean, suddenly you have no depth at the inside linebacker. The depth chart had five names on it. It now has three.
Right.
You've lost two of them. And so my question to you is, who, at a minimum, they've got to scribble one name in there. So what other name gets brought back inside?
You know, I saw that Joshua McMillan was practicing some on the inside. You know, at some point you would think him more than
Chris Allen, right?
Yeah, I think him more than Chris Allen. I don't know that he's more of an old school middle linebacker, and so I don't know that he's as, you know, quick sideline to sideline, but you know, at some point you need bodies, and if you can use him situationally, then to sort of suck up some snaps, that can be okay too.
Yeah, see, I was trying to decide, it was it him or Mika Brown that you brought inside, because they're both similar frame type of guys.
Well, yeah, I don't know. You may nod to the older guy because he's got more familiarity with just the system in general, But yeah, you may give them both a shot and, you know, see who can stick.
Well, what's also going to be interesting about this is I think another thing that could result from this is we go more to playing, you know, more of do we go more to a three linebacker look in base nickel and dime looks? Do we see going away from two inside linebackers some to compensate for this?
Well, we may have to mix it up with personnel groupings as well. You know, earlier in the season, you know, just another wrinkle, earlier in the season, we were giving LeBryan Ray some, you know, sort of experimenting with him in practice at a linebacker position. So maybe we can try to do something with him. And, you know, he's played some sort of defensive end. And so, you know, you split the difference between an outside linebacker that walks up, puts his hand in the dirt to, you know, versus a defensive end. You know, you can steal some snaps that way too.
Well, let's talk about the Eddie Jackson situation. So Sean Dion Hamilton was obviously huge. I think Mika would have been cataclysmic, if that's the right word. he would have been Eddie Jackson from last year times two, maybe.
Yeah.
No offense to our boy Eddie, but we've talked about the value that Mika provides. And so I'm happy to hear that they said that, you know, we're going to sit him out a day. And quite frankly, David, I don't care if they sit him out for the next 2 weeks. I don't know that we have to have him against Mississippi State and Mercer, but we need him from there on out.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, on one hand, I'm glad it's – I don't want to use the word just. On one hand, I'm glad that it's a hamstring. On the other hand, it's a hamstring. And those can be tricky, right? They can be tough to get over. And we saw us bring, you know, Josh Jacobs along slowly on offense when he had a hamstring. And, you know, we saw us bring him along slowly in the season. And he experienced that in the preseason. And so, you know, not every hamstring's the same. And so Minka's could be not as bad. So there's all sorts of stuff. You know, I saw where coach thought that he might, you know, start to practice early in the week, you know, midweekish. And so that'll tell you something. So this could net out to be, you know, there's a gamut here, right? This could net out to be nothing. This could net out to bug him for, you know, through the SEC championship. And, you know, for us to get through that, for Alabama to get through that in the fashion that we want, we're going to need him to be healthy and ready to go. And so, you know, what I'm saying is we need him or this doesn't happen the way we want it to.
No, absolutely. And apparently in practice today, you know, in the media observation period, Tony Brown was struggling with a hamstring as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you've got his backup who's having, you know, hamstring issues as well, which is why you saw Carter out there at the end of the ball game.
Yeah, definitely Shy Carter out there. I'll tell you this, and I did a double take, and I did probably a triple take, and I called it out in the stadium, and I had one person try to correct me, and I had another person, you know, tell me that they had not noticed. And so I started second-guessing myself, and I would look and look and look, and every time I was right. But in dime, we brought in freshman Daniel Wright in Minka's position. And I thought that was interesting. I would not have expected him to come in. I would have said Xavier McKinney. I would have said Deontay Thompson. I would have said a couple of names before I got to Daniel Wright. But when I saw number three in there, I was like, wait a minute. That was a shocker to me. I don't think he really registered, you know, anything, but the fact that he was in there, I was impressed.
Yeah, but that tells you something about the situation at cornerback, right?
Yes.
And I mean, that shouldn't surprise you when you've got Levi Wallace as a, you know, former walk-on who's, you know, won a starting job. Yep. What I mean by that is that there's open competition behind the starting guys at the cornerback position, right? And so right now, if you've got a Tony Brown and a Minka who are banged up with the same injury, that is, you know, touch and go, I'm going to tell you as a little wrinkle is that I think we might see Ronnie Harrison move down to the star position if need be on a situation by situation basis in certain looks.
No, I think that's fair. And you know, moving him closer to the line of scrimmage, you know, he is sort of a thumper. So I think that, you know, that bodes well. You know, he plays that over the top safety really well. And so and this is something we've sort of broken down before, right? Where is if you take sort of the backup DBs, where's the next best one, and what positions can he play? And so, you know, are we better off? Do we have a stronger backup free safety that allows us to move Harrison down, or do we have a stronger, you know, player at more of a strong safety? And so we maneuver, you know, that kind of way. I think we'll see shifting, and it's more obvious, you know, to like the average fan that sort of tries to keep up. It's more obvious if you think about offensive line, right? We have to bring in another, you know, left tackle. And so we're probably going to do that by moving over the right tackle, maybe kicking out a guard and then bringing in, you know, the next best lineman's a guard, you know, that kind of thing. And you can sort of see it, right? Because they're all lined up. In the secondary, it's much more fluid. It's harder to see. But I think what we get may be a function of where the next best talent is. And you may be spot on. It may be, you know, Harrison sliding down and then, you know, a McKinley or, you know, a Deontay or, you know, something like that. That may be quite interesting to see how that unfolds. But isn't it kind of interesting, you know, and we've talked about the secondary and replacing all the secondary. Isn't it kind of interesting that, you know, Shai Carter, you think about, you know, the glimpse into the future, Shai Carter and Daniel Wright, you know, looks like maybe they got a head start on some opportunity there.
No, absolutely. But on the play by Ronnie Harrison, and this just speaks to his value to this team, when he made that interception in this game, he was lined up against LSU's, you know, starting tailback. I mean, he was lined up in the slot against him. And I think Etling went to him because he said, this is my matchup. Right. I've got slow safety against my starting tailback here. And that's why he went there, dude. And the athleticism of Ronnie to pick it off is why I'm saying I think you might see that, because he was lined up against Geis in that situation because Minka was currently out of the game.
Right. You know what that tells me?
What?
That tells me the LSU folks are not listening to our podcast, because that is the third time that we have called out this season, and it goes back to the A&M game. It's the third time we've talked about a team trying to pick on the matchup between sort of one of their better offensive players getting matched up against Ronnie Harrison.
Sure.
And they've been burned, you know, one way or the other, incomplete pass or here's a pickoff. They've been burned for attempting that.
Well, think about this, man.
To the point that his draft stock has to be going nuts, right?
Oh, sure. But think about this. I mean, on that play, Minka's out of the game, right? And I wish I was a fly on the wall to know, were they yelling to him in his helmet, the coordinator, saying, this is your matchup, right?
Right.
I mean, like, did they know? Did they screw up too? Or was he the only one that screwed up? Because when he made that pick, I turned to people around me and I said, that interception right there just made him an extra $250,000 on draft day, because a lot of scouts are going to be showing that little clip right there in prime time against a team like this. This is going to be running around the scout room for several NFL teams.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And we could almost splice that film together, right? Because we have talked about it on the show, those exact moments. And I'm glad we're kind of parking on him, because as soon as you mentioned him, I was like, damn, he must be the most underrated player on the defense for the top end things that he's done. Not just, you know, a solid, you know, sort of contributor, but he has done top end things, like top shelf performances, and he can't hardly get a mention. And so I'm glad we're parking on him, because damn, he is so good. And I think that he does, you know, give us some versatility. And I'm hoping Minka comes back, and I'm hoping we don't have to upset the apple cart too much, but I think he gives us some versatility, because I think he can play a couple of different positions, and his skill set has really been proven, you know, because even that interception was a very physical play. I mean, he just went in and just wrestled the ball away from the guy. There was no opportunity. Is this a split possession sort of thing? I mean, he said, my ball. And that was impressive.
No, absolutely. And, you know, another guy, we've mentioned him already on this side of the ball, but I do want to park on him for a second as well, is Rashawn Evans. For him to lead the team in tackles with 14 tackles, with an injury and getting taped up on the field and, you know, basically playing the whole game and not coming out. And yep. He knew his team needed him with Sean Dion Hamilton out. And so just the leadership that I can't give him a mini game ball because he's not mini game ball worthy. And so, you know, he sees another fifth year senior go down and he's like, I got to step up here. And he did. And it was huge in this football game.
And for a little bit, isn't that the name of his game? Because he stepped in last year when, you know, Eddie Jackson went down and we had to do some shuffling. You know, he really saw a lot more playing time last year in that situation. And so, you know, and he's seen more playing time this year, but he's going to see a bump of it, a bump as long as Minka's out, or, you know, there's some question mark there. So in that kind of a little bit ironic that he has been one of the primary beneficiaries.
No, absolutely. And I wanted to just mention, you know, his performance, because his performance was huge. You know, to be able to step in and make the plays that he made in this football game.
Right.
Another guy I want to mention real quick is Raekwon Davis. You know, I was shocked when, you know, I knew he had made a lot of plays in the game. I didn't realize he had made 11 tackles on the game, contributed for 11 tackles along with his sack. And this is a guy that, you know, is getting better each week as well. And to step up with an opponent like this,
yep,
and put up those stats, you know, was huge.
Yeah, you know, this is not the opponent you expect someone to necessarily have a breakout day. And, you know, he's been putting together a good season, just up and down, you know, sort of the roster. But yeah, he had quite a number of tackles and then certainly a sack on Saturday. And that's good to see. And this goes back to our offensive, you know, our defensive line play. That you know, we knew that we kind of had some names, but you know, he didn't play a lot last year, and so we knew that, you know, he makes the first one off the bus team, but we didn't know really what we had in the way of a player. Well, he's a player.
Well, if you look at these stats, right? So going back to Rashawn Evans, you know, just, I mean, literally for him to have the game he had was huge, with, you know, his comrade Sean going down. But then if you look in the, you know, obviously I mentioned his name again because he was first on the stat sheet. But then if you look at the top six names on the stat sheet at the beginning of the season, would you have thought that two of those six names was going to be Raekwon Davis and Quinnen Williams?
No.
No. Those are two of the top six.
No. I mean, that's incredible. And it goes to what we're talking about, development on the D front, which is incredible. And we talk about guys that we know are going to be back next year, which that's fun too. I don't think you could have given me the defensive roster and I would have picked those two out to hold that sort of stature in any game this year.
And I think this just speaks to how many guys that we've gotten playing time that we've talked about for weeks now.
Yes.
I think this is coming to fruition right now.
Yes. Yes.
What else jumps out at you on defense?
You know, the guys that go unmentioned, Levi Wallace and Anthony Averett, I thought they had, you know, good games, not a lot of stats necessarily, but I thought they had pretty good games.
All right, I have to ask you a quiz. Who do they remind you of, former player from the offensive side of the ball, that was never flashy, but you could always count on him to get the job done, and he played right tackle? DD.
Yeah, Drew Davis.
Yes. They're the Drew Davis of the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, teams keep picking on them. They don't get anywhere with them. They're not flashy. They're not like saying, look at me, I'm great. They just come with their lunch pail and just go to work.
Yeah. Which makes them very uncorner-like, right? Because yes. They're not out there sort of running their mouth and look at me and all of that. And, hey, we really enjoyed, you know, Dre Kirkpatrick, right? I mean, we really did. But he's a different cat, right? Or these guys yes. are different cats, however you want to say it, right?
Yes.
You would not believe that they all play the same position.
Correct. No, this is true. Well, did you get a chance to focus any on Hand when he was in there? And just kind of what was your take before we go to mini game balls? What was your take on Hand, you know, getting work back into the defense?
Yeah, you know, I didn't focus on him necessarily a whole lot. You know, he was in and out a lot. And so I just thought early on, you know, he's going to be on a snap count. And it seemed to be true. And it seemed like we were running, you know, him and Quinnen in. And so I thought that was interesting that when we talk about Quinnen, not to talk about him when you ask about somebody else, but I thought that was interesting that seemed to be the players that we were rotating. But I'm glad that we got him back. And I kind of figured we would coming off the bye. And so it'll be good to see him get more and more reps. And hopefully he just gets a fire lit under him, you know, this last stretch of the season.
No, absolutely. So do you have a mini game ball?
Yeah, I've already mentioned him. I'm going Daniel Wright. It's a guy that, you know, and I mean, they practice every day. And so his sense of this is going to be different from mine. But, you know, shit, I have to think if you're a backup for Minkah Fitzpatrick, that's an invitation to, you know, nail your shoes to the bench. And so you do that and you might be, you know, inclined to have the mindset that I am not going to get to play today. But he seemed to come in, and I know it was only dime package, and, you know, he is a true freshman, and so we're going to limit how we use him. But the fact that we used him, I hats off. I'm impressed. And we start thinking about, you know, guys next season that are going to fill roles, then he's got a taste of something. And so I hope he savors that and uses that to propel him forward.
Well, you know, we only have a couple, interestingly enough, we only have a few Florida boys on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how talent rich the state of Florida is, right?
Right.
So he's a Florida boy. Well, would you be surprised? A little nugget. This will be my mini game ball side note. We have five Florida boys on the team. Five. And so, surprisingly, you've got Daniel Wright, Jerry Judy, Calvin Ridley, and then you've got your boy that you mentioned. We've obviously mentioned Ronnie Harrison today. Mm-hmm. And then you have Alex Leatherwood. Those are mm-hmm. our only homegrown Florida boys on this team. So Daniel Wright comes from a talent-rich area. And obviously there's a lot of things that they have seen in practice that we have not been able to see yet ourselves. For them to bring him in, whatever the package is, for the first time in his career in the LSU game.
Yeah. That's a big stage to have to come in on. So
I mean, you know, we didn't bring him in against Mercer. We brought him in against LSU.
No, we were not easing him into it.
So that's a huge thing. No, I do want to just – we talked about it earlier, Quinnen Williams. I think this is just a big moment for him. Mm-hmm. And in case Hand comes back more slowly, him on this stage to be able to contribute like he did, like we talked about earlier, is just really is really mini game ball worthy. I have to let you have the stage here for special teams because I have to let you lead off here. You gotta talk to the listeners here about your boy JK.
Well, I mean, this may be his single best performance, you know, for the Crimson Tide. I mean, he had 8 points, averaged over 51.
Has he ever had 8 punts in a game? I mean, we have to go back and look, man, but is that a record for him?
That may be. That's quite a number. But he didn't get tired doing it, right? He averaged over 51, almost 52 yards per punt, really a couple times helped flip the field position, which is exactly what you want a punter to do. That's when a punter can become a weapon. He's not just sort of bailing you out of a hole, but he is really sort of driving the ball and flipping the field. I think he was instrumental in doing that. And I think he had one of his best days wearing crimson, and that was a joy to see.
No, that was awesome, man. And definitely this was a record for this year. He had last year, he had two games where he had this kind of punts, and unfortunately it was against Washington and he had 8, and then Clemson he had 10. But in those games, he averaged like 45 yards a punt. So yeah, to sit there and crank out almost 52 yards average is freaking ridiculous. And just the hang time, you know, Saban talked about it in his press conference, you know, just for the listeners, he talked about how they doubled the two gunners and they only had 6 guys inside and they were going to take the gunners away, which is a weapon for us on the coverage. And so JK, you know, typically he averages 3 punts a game. And so here he is dropping back to punt 8 times and his gunners aren't there to kind of help him like they normally do. They really do a good job. Mm-hmm. And so he had to do it by himself because they had taken the gunners out of the play. And he did it himself by putting the ball up in the moon, you know, as far as hang time and being able to give the rest of the special teams guys time to get down there by just the pure force of how he does things. And so that's just awesome. That right there made him some money.
Yeah, I think so. Right. I mean, that's I think you're going to look at this guy as really being able to do something for you, you know, at the next level. What do you think about, what do you think about Xavier Marks returning punts all day long? He was in there from the start.
I was going to look. Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised. I thought there'd be a little, he only got 3 opportunities to field them. I thought it would be more of a by committee thing. It makes you wonder if Saban has said, this is yours to take, and if you can step in there and just show me you can safely field the ball, then you'll be the guy. It seems like he just wants somebody to do it and just wants to be done with it.
It feels like decision made, right?
Well,
I mean, we're not experimenting. I'm not going to burn any more brain power on this. Decision made. Don't drop.
Yes, except when Marks got his number called because the other two made miffs, you know, he had a fumble.
Yep.
And so I thought it was still by committee because even when Marks got his number again, you know, he fumbled the ball as well.
Yeah.
So I was surprised that he's the only guy that got an opportunity. Unfortunately, you know, we got spoiled last year when Eddie got back there and we saw what, you know, Eddie could do to a football game. And so right now, if Marks is the guy, we're not flipping the field with our punt return coverage. Okay. Right. Or with our punt returns, I'll say it that way. And maybe Saban doesn't care. Maybe Saban just wants the ball and just hold on to the ball and let's just give it to the offense and let's take it from there.
Well, you know, the first priority I think is let's definitely hold the ball. I wonder, I contradict myself here a little bit, but you know, we talked about playing sort of with a shorter bench. And so I wonder if we didn't say, look, we're putting our most experienced punt returner in there. And his upside is not what the other guys is in terms of returning. But right now we need to possess the ball and we need to do that more important than anything else.
So that's all we care about.
Our most experienced guy. And then, and there were some tight quarters in which, you know, he caught the ball. And so you wonder if that wasn't the decision, and then we'll kind of see what happens. I guess I can make a case either way. But it does feel like another guy who won the bye week, right?
Well, now that's a good point. It's very possible that the open competition occurred during the bye week and we'll never know anything about that.
Right.
That is very possible.
Right.
Well, what else jumps out at you on special teams? Because because there was such a good performance by JK, it made it kind of boring for a lot of the other guys to do a lot of things. What else jumped out at you?
You know, I saw a couple things, and we're just talking about Xavier and the punt return, so I'll kind of stick there. We had I want to say it was Tony Brown. I'd have to go back and look at the film. It may have been someone else, but I want to say it was Tony Brown. But on punt returns, you know, he would kind of line up over the middle, and then just before the snap, he would peel off and start backpedaling, you know, sort of aggressively going backwards. And then he would sort of line up ahead of the punter in the middle of the field, and he would just pick off the first guy that came through. He was like a designated sniper that he was just going to peel off and pick off the first guy that came through. And I thought that was an interesting thing. I don't know that I've seen us do that before, and that really stood out. That really stood out to me. And then to your point, you talked about the doubling of the gunners and taking them away. You know, you spotted that a couple of weeks ago, and you know, I had a note on that. It seemed LSU pretty aggressively was doing that, to the point that I thought at least once they could have been called for holding, because our guy, you know, didn't get 10 yards off the line of scrimmage, you know, for the duration of the play. But and then, you know, we're talking about special teams. I mean, you got to talk about, you know, Andy Papanastos. You know, he had a 40-yarder. Although that was an important kick, and we've talked about that 3-point before. But you know, that drive and that kick, I thought that was an important kick. And
that
so,
they let, but also that they let him take it. Yeah. Right. I mean, it was interesting because, you know, that's for the second week in a row. That's in the range that before you were letting JK do it.
Early in the season, we would not have let him, you know, kick a 40-yarder. And then, you know, and there were times when we were talking about, you know, and not to sort of disparage ourselves, but there were times earlier in the season where we were talking about any kick he makes is a good kick. And then, you know, he would make a kick and it'd be like a 22-yarder. And you know, we might say, yeah, but it's only just 22 yards. Wouldn't it feel better if it were a little longer? And, you know, every little granular, you know, granule of confidence that he could accrue was a good thing. And then here now he looks like he's got a bushel of confidence here, because he went out and nailed that 40-yarder. And I like where his head is now versus, you know, maybe in camp and early season.
Well, and not only did he nail it, I mean, it was right down the middle. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I guess that's the same as nailing it, but like there was no doubt when he kicked it that it was going through, and he's 45 of 45 on extra points.
Yep.
And now he's a respectable 14 out of 17 on field goals. And, you know, good job for Saban, because this guy missed two from 40 to 49 yards out in the Florida State game. And, you know, he's only missed one the rest of the season since that first, you know, football game.
Right.
And so Saban's doing something right with that. So that's,
yeah,
that's awesome.
No, I think that is good. I think that is good. So Mississippi State up next. What do you think about that?
You know, this team, I don't want to say they scare me, because I do think we're going to win. But I definitely think that, you know, the schedule is obviously getting tougher, and this is a tough matchup.
Yeah.
You know, this is a team that has played very well. You know, obviously 7-2, but you know, their quarterback, you know, Nick Fitzgerald he's not a Cam Newton, but he has a very effective use of being able to run the ball. You know, big kid, is able to, you know, has the dual threat. What really is going to be, I think, tough for us to match up to is how, you know, just how they use their receivers. I mean, they've lost two or three receivers to injury, but they have been able to work other guys in, predominantly their running backs and their tight ends, into the passing game. And they've got a couple of tight ends that are some big boys.
Yeah.
And that I think are very mobile and are able to play in the slot able to create, you know, mismatch problems. Mississippi State's always been a physical team. And, you know, Dan Mullen is a great coach. And this is not going to be a cakewalk, man. This is going to be a tough game.
No, it really is. And it's a cliche to say this team always plays as tough. But Mississippi State is one of those teams that always plays as tough. I remember, and I've probably told this story on you know, the podcast before, but I remember, and, you know, I date myself a little bit, but I remember, you know, in graduate school, my first year of graduate school was awesome. I had Dabo Swinney in class, and Willard Sissom was in the class, and that was just awesome. But that season we were playing, we played Mississippi State in Starkville, and we were having a pretty good season. And Will and I would talk ball a little bit. And I was like, yeah, but it's Mississippi State. You know, we always do pretty well against them. And he looked at me and he had the most dead serious face. And he goes, no, man, Mississippi State always plays us tough. They are a very, very tough team. And I remember we just barely got out of that game. And it was Dennis Riddle scoring, you know, as a, you know, true freshman. And we barely got out of that game. And so, you know, you never look past LSU, but, you know, it, as fans, sometimes we have the unique opportunity to do that. And what I wrote down in my notes, you know, about Mississippi State is, you know, this is a tough game coming off a tough game. And so we've talked about injuries on defense. We've talked about, you know, what can we do, and how are we going to kind of combat this? And we got to figure it out quickly, because it's not like, well, we got Fresno and Colorado State, we got time to figure it out. These guys are kind of up and down, but guess what? They're going to be up this week, and we're going to get all that they've got. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, we've asked the question, how would you try to attack Alabama? Well, I tell you, one of the things I'd do, and is exactly what you said, is I'd saddle up those two tight ends. And I would pound the middle of our defense in, you know, sort of short passing games. And you know, let's put some big bodies out there that are going to be tough to tackle and see if this defense can sort of stand up to it. Now, we think that we can, and we think that we can get to the quarterback, and I like our team better than theirs. But I'm just saying, what else they got to play for, right? They can lay it on the line and go out and be as physical as they absolutely can. And I expect that's what we're going to see on Saturday.
You know, I agree with you from a tight end standpoint. You know, in this last weekend's game, one of their tight ends, you know, is a junior college transfer, Jordan Thomas. You know, I had to go and look at the stat sheet to make sure this was right. But, you know, because the TV was saying he was 6'5", 284 pounds. Well, I don't know how this guy started at East Central Community College, but this guy was given the DBs in the slot all they wanted, and he was catching every ball that was thrown to him, and he was a mismatch for them big time. And so I think there's going to be a heavy dose with our inside linebacker injuries. I think there's going to be a heavy dose of these tight ends between the hashes on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree. What kind of score are you looking for?
You know, I think this one's going to be. I think this one's going to be very close, man. I think this is going to be something like a. I think this is going to be something like a 27-10 ball game, and I think it's going to feel a lot closer for most of the game. And I think it's only at the end of the game that we're going to be able to put this thing away.
Okay, we're on the same page. I wrote down 24-10, and I know that's the same score that we had against LSU. But I just started thinking about it, and I was like, man, we're going to replicate this score. We're going to get 24-10 two weeks in a row. And I, to your point, I never felt that the LSU game was in jeopardy. We jumped out on them, and I thought that we've put a bar out too high. But I think this game, and you said it a little differently than I'm saying it, but I think it's closer for longer, and it feels not that we are going to believe that we're going to lose to Mississippi State, but it's going to feel uncomfortably close, like this could go the other way. It's going to feel that way for longer, and then I think sort of the depth pays off later in the game.
No, I'm with you there. I think this game is definitely going to keep people on the edge of their seats for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine I will be mad at my television before it's over.
Definitely enjoyed this. Anything else that we need to wrap up here today?
Yeah, I want to hit self-indulgent sort of ego section that we like to do. We got one review, but I'll hit three things like really, really quickly. We had a guy leave us a review a couple of weeks ago, Doug from Sweden, and he dropped us an email and he had an idea that I thought was a good idea. We've kind of toyed with it, but soliciting questions from the listeners. And so absolutely, if you guys have a question, drop us an email, alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com. And we'll take a look at those. We've talked about questions in the podcast. We've addressed them there before. We've sort of written mailbag articles on the website, and we'll do that. But if you have any questions, drop us some questions, and we'll see if we can't take a look at answering those. So that's one thing I wanted to talk about. I wanted to, I'll kind of tell myself a little bit. We've been doing, the iTunes for a little bit and listener reviews and stuff. And it was just over a couple of weeks ago after the Tennessee podcast that I recognized there was a difference between just people leaving ratings versus reviews. Because I was watching the count of the ratings go up, but we weren't getting any more reviews. And I was like, well, that's weird. I don't understand it. But they're actually two different things. So leave us a rating. We love those. And then leave us a review as well, because we like to, share those back to the group. And so that's a sort of a long way of introducing a review that we have by Ross Gaskin. And he says, I wanted something that gave me more in-depth analysis of Alabama football, and I couldn't have found a better podcast for it. They both really know their stuff and have great insights. It's made the games more fun to watch, especially in garbage time, as I know more things to look for. Definitely recommend to any Alabama or college football fan. And Tommy, that's awesome, because that's what, I mean, the way he sort of wrote that out, is like, man, that's what we're going for.
That's why we started this. That's why we do what we do.
Right.
Because of that right there. So that's awesome.
And so, like I didn't write that review, but that's what I would want to write. That's what I want to see someone say, because you're right. This is why we started looking, doing this sort of peeling back from the headline stuff and what's that sort of deeper level stuff. So, and I say this every time, I especially enjoy this one. I especially enjoy all of them. And certainly reading this one was a lot of fun, because it sort of personifies, to your point, this is why we're here. This is why, you and I are still talking football after all these years.
No, guys, we very much, we appreciate the feedback. Please share with us what you like. If there's anything that we need to improve upon, tell us about that as well. And we want to hear your feedback so we can improve the show, and so we can get the message out to other people to find us as well.
Absolutely. Well, hey, get out there on iTunes and leave us a rating, leave us a review, drop us an email with questions or, like Tommy said, just any sort of comments that you have for us. And we greatly appreciate it. We enjoy engaging with you folks as best as we can. But at this point, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out, where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.